What's up, bottle buddies and sip seekers? Welcome to a brand new deep dive episode of the world famous Hype Truck and Wine podcast. This is our fantastic English speaking AI version where your amazing hosts Anna and Julian will take you on a journey through fascinating wine topics. Tune in as they share captivating insights from the world of wine with our international audience. Enjoy this marvelous episode and don't forget to subscribe to stay up to date with the latest wine news and updates. These are the
good times. All right, so today we're diving into the world of Chateau Pitres. You know, one of the most legendary wines out there. You sent me some really interesting stuff on it. I'm ready to unpack all this. What makes it so special? Why is it so expensive? And I'm especially curious to get your take on all of this.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story for sure. There's just so much mystique surrounding this Pitres. It's almost mythical, in the wine world.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this episode we have from the German wine podcast, Halbtrocken. By the way, that means semi-dry. They jump right into this idea of like Pitres as a status symbol. It's an investment, almost a legend. But they raise a really interesting question, too. Like, is it really that much better than other Pomerol wines? You would think for the price, it would have to be like the undisputed champion, right?
Well, that's where things get interesting. Pitres does consistently get these super high scores from critics. But, you know, some wines from neighboring estates, like Chateau Lafleur. Or Chateau L'Evangile, they actually score even higher in some vintages. So maybe it's not always about just being the absolute best in terms of, you know, pure quality. What do you think?
That's a good point. So what is driving that astronomical price then?
Well, scarcity is a huge factor. Chateau Pitres only makes like 25,000 to 30,000 bottles a year, which is tiny compared to a lot of these other Bordeaux estates. And you know what they say about supply and demand?
Oh, yeah. Less of something makes people want it even more.
Yeah.
Especially when it's already, you know, top tier. That reminds me of this story in the podcast about this retailer, Mövenpick, back in 2002. They were selling Pitres. But you can only get a bottle if you spent at least 4,000 euros on other wines. Is that even legal? I mean, I know you're a serious wine enthusiast. Have you ever run into a deal like that?
Uh-huh. I've seen some creative sales tactics. But that one takes the cake. It really speaks to the lengths that people will go to get their hands on a bottle of Pitres.
Totally. But let's get into what actually makes this wine so unique. Like, what sets it apart from the rest of the Pomerol pack?
Well, it all starts with the terroir. You know, the land where the grapes are grown. The Pitres vineyard sits on this very specific geological formation. They call it the buttonhole. It's this tiny area, only about 20 hectares. And it's got a really unusual composition. It's a thin layer of gravel and sand over this very iron-rich clay. And that clay is really the key to understanding Pitres.
Okay, so we're talking more than just dirt here, right? What's so special about this clay? How does it actually impact the wine?
Well, you see, this iron-rich clay is amazing at retaining water, which is really important in the relatively dry Pomerol region. And this allows the Merlot grapes to reach, like, perfect ripeness. And that translates directly into the wine's, you know, signature characteristics. It contributes to those concentrated flavors, the velvety texture, and that incredible aging potential that Pitres is known for.
Ah, so this clay is like the foundation of the whole thing, literally. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing it's not just about the dirt. The winemaking process has got to be pretty unique too, right?
Oh, absolutely. At Chateau Pitres, they're meticulous about every single step. Everything's done by hand. And they have these incredibly high standards.
Yeah, the podcast mentioned the selective harvesting process, where they actually go through the vineyard multiple times, only picking the perfectly ripe grapes each time. That sounds incredibly labor intensive.
Oh, it is. And they take those grapes very seriously.
Yeah.
In rainy years, they've even been known to use a helicopter to dry the vines before harvest.
Man, a helicopter, seriously?
Yeah. They fly it low over the vineyard, creates a downdraft to get rid of the excess moisture.
Wow, a helicopter. That's next level dedication. It must be quite a sight to see.
I can only imagine. But it really goes to show you how much care and attention goes into every bottle of Pitres. And that commitment to quality extends even to the grapes they don't use, so in less favorable years. Mm. Rather than compromising their main wine, they'll actually sell off some of their grapes to other winemakers.
Wow. So it's all about maintaining that reputation for excellence no matter what. It's starting to make sense why Pitres is so sought after. But with all this hype, I can't help but think there must be a lot of fake Petras out there, right?
You're absolutely right. Counterfeiting is a major problem, especially for those like really sought after vintages, like the 1961 and the 1982. These older bottles are often missing documentation, or they have labels that are easier to forge. And with those prices so high, the incentive for counterfeiters is huge.
So what are they doing to combat that?
Well, since the late 1990s, every bottle of Petrus has been engraved with a unique mark to help ensure its authenticity. And for vintages from 2013 onwards, they've even added this unique identification number to the back label that you can actually verify online.
Oh, so it's like a high-tech wine passport. It's incredible how much effort goes into protecting the integrity of something like this. It makes you realize just how valuable a bottle of Petrus truly is.
It certainly does. But even with all these precautions, you still have to be really careful, especially when you're buying older vintages.
That's good advice. So we've covered the unique terroir, the meticulous production methods, the lengths they go to prevent counterfeiting. But let's circle back to that initial question. Is Chateau Petrus truly worth the hype? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a tough one. The wine itself is amazing, no doubt. But like we were saying, some other Pomeroles, you know, they can get up there too. In terms of quality, I think with Petrus, it's about more than just what's in the glass.
You're right. The podcast talked about that too, how Petrus has this almost mythical status. It's not just the taste, it's the whole experience, you know, the history, the prestige. Can you really even put a price on that?
Yeah, it's true. There's this undeniable allure to it, this mystique that surrounds Petrus. It's become the symbol of success.
Yeah.
You know, luxury, a certain lifestyle even. I think for a lot of people, that's a big part of the appeal.
Like you're buying into a story, a legacy. And that probably factors into the price tag too, right?
Oh, absolutely. You're not just buying a bottle of wine. You're buying a piece of history, a piece of the Petrus legend. Economists and wine experts have been arguing about this for years. How much of the price is driven by that intangible value, that something extra, you know, beyond just the liquid in the bottle?
Yeah, it's like those luxury handbags or, you know, rare sports cars. The price isn't just about the materials or the craftsmanship. It's about what it represents.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that makes Petrus so fascinating. It's a wine that transcends its physical form. It becomes aspirational.
But let's not forget about the wine itself. The podcast mentioned that Petrus is famous for its aging potential. They said it can age for decades, even centuries. Is that really true?
Well, it's true that Petrus has incredible aging potential. You know, that combination of the Merlot grape, that unique terroir we were talking about, and those super meticulous winemaking practices. It results in a wine that's really built to last. It has these firm but refined tannins, balanced acidity, and this concentrated yet elegant fruit. All these elements allow the wine to evolve beautifully over time.
So it's not just a wine for right now. It's like an investment for the future.
A lot of collectors see it that way. They buy Petrus to lay it down, you know, save it for special occasions, years or even decades down the line.
Like buying a time capsule,
a snapshot
of a particular vintage that you can revisit years later.
That's a beautiful way to put it. When you open a well-aged bottle of Petrus, you're not just tasting the wine, you're tasting history. The evolution of the vineyard, the skill of the winemakers, the passage of time.
Okay, now you're just making me want to try it even more. But for those of us who aren't dropping thousands of dollars on a bottle anytime soon, what are some of the key takeaways here? What can we learn from this deep dive into Chateau Petrus?
Well, I think one of the biggest takeaways is that the world of wine is just full of incredible discoveries, just waiting to be made. There's always something new to explore, to experiment with, to challenge your palate. Don't be afraid to step outside your comfort zone.
That's what the deep dive is all about. But besides, you know, broadening our horizons and maybe indulging in a little wine envy, what else can we glean from this exploration of Petrus?
I think it really highlights the importance of understanding what goes into making a truly exceptional wine. It's about more than just the grape varietal. It's the terroir, the climate, the winemaking philosophy, the dedication and passion of everyone involved. It's really about the whole package.
It's a reminder that sometimes the most extraordinary things in life are the result of passion, patience, and this relentless pursuit of excellence.
Beautifully said. And you know, who knows? Maybe someday we'll all have the opportunity to experience the taste of Chateau Petrus ourselves.
I can dream right. But in the meantime, I think I'm going to go open a bottle of something special and toast to the pursuit of great wine, whatever that might look like for each of us.
Cheers to that.
You know, as we've been talking about like the prestige of Petrus and the price, I've been thinking about the people behind it all.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to get caught up in all the glamour. But there's a human element to this story, too, that I find really fascinating.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we've talked about the meticulous production and all, but there are real people, you know, behind every step, from the vineyard workers who are out there tending the vines every single day to the winemakers who are making those crucial decisions about the grapes, the blends, the aging process. It takes a whole team of passionate people to create a wine like Petrus.
Yeah, and I imagine that passion and expertise is passed down, you know, through generations.
Exactly. The podcast mentioned that the Mouy family has owned Chateau Petrus since the 1960s, and they've really been instrumental in shaping its reputation, maintaining those incredibly high standards.
It's like a family legacy, this tradition of excellence that's carried on through their work.
Precisely. And I think that's something we often forget when we talk about these luxury goods, whether it's, you know, wine or fashion or cars. There are real people, real stories, and real passion behind these products.
And those stories are just as important as the final product, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. They add another layer of meaning and appreciation. It's not just about the object itself, you know, it's about the hands that crafted it, the generations of knowledge and skill that went into making it.
It's about the journey, not just the destination. And while we may not all be able to afford a bottle of Chateau Petrus, we can all appreciate, you know, the artistry, the dedication, the sheer human effort that goes into making something so extraordinary.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, maybe it can even inspire us to find our own Chateau Petrus in our own lives.
Yes.
That thing that we're passionate about, that thing that we strive to do exceptionally well, even if it's not something that comes with, you know, a hefty price tag.
I love that. It's about finding that thing that makes us tick, that drives us to be our best selves. And maybe, just maybe someday, we'll have the chance to raise a glass of Chateau Petrus and toast to the pursuit of excellence in all its forms.
I'll drink to that.
Well, I think that about wraps up our deep dive into the world of Chateau Petrus.
It's been a fascinating journey.
Really has. And I don't know about you, but I'm feeling kind of thirsty for a good glass of wine now. Maybe even a Pomerol.
You read my mind.
To all our listeners out there, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep those glasses full.
Cheers.
Whoa, fellas, another incredible show in the books. We hope you enjoyed it and took away some great insights. Remember to subscribe to this amazing wine podcast so you're always the first to get the latest wine news. Cheers, and have an absolutely fantastic day. These are the